You're listening to the Are You Weddy podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Gaskarth, owner of 87 Events, a luxury wedding design and planning company. I'm here to share my expertise on everything wedding, from straightforward tips and tricks for planning your wedding to advice on how to deal with the inevitable Karens bringing the wedding drama. Stay tuned. Hi, friends. Thanks for joining. Gosh, it's been a while, huh? Trying to keep up with content during busy season is no small feat for me. Honestly, it's my biggest challenge when I'm busy. Anyone else feel the same? For me, clients come first, so I've had to put this on the back burner for a bit and just give myself some grace on keeping up with socials and pod episodes. Thank you so much for your patience, and for those of you who haven't tuned me out yet, thanks for sticking with me. Okay, so today's episode is a big one. We're going to talk about how to build your wedding day timeline. This is the foundation of communication between you and your vendors on the day of your wedding. If your timeline is well thought out and everyone is on the same page, you're more likely to be smooth sailing on the day of. First things first, when do you begin building your timeline? For me, I start working on my timelines in the notes section of my computer, and I do this pretty much right from the time we book a wedding venue and begin making decisions that relate to the timeline. The first thing you'll most likely decide on is your ceremony time. I go ahead and add that into my skeleton timeline, and through the months leading up to the wedding, I continue to add things until I get to a point where I have enough details to move it over to a more formal document. This usually happens a couple months out from the wedding. But it's honestly, at that point, still in flux up until even a few weeks before the wedding when the details are completely solidified and unlikely to change. So what goes into the skeleton timeline? Let's go ahead and begin building one together. We'll begin with ceremony time. And with each item that's going into the timeline, you have to ask questions or think through logistics to land on a specific time. Let's take ceremony to start. Say your ceremony start time is 5 o'clock p.m. How long is your ceremony going to be? For a non-religious ceremony, I usually allot about 30 minutes from processional to recessional, but this may vary, so ask your officiant. For a religious ceremony, it could be 45 minutes or 2 hours. Yes, really. And sometimes there are snacks involved. So make sure to ask your officiant how much time you need from the time the processional starts until the recessional ends. Next, we need to think through transportation. Is your ceremony at the same venue as your reception, or will you need to add transportation time for guests to get from one point to the next? Always leave a buffer for transpo. Also, big tip, check online and with your hotel to see if there are any big events in town that might cause traffic delays. Every October in Baltimore, there's a marathon, and tons of roads downtown are completely shut down. We have to figure out what roads are blocked and when, as well as add in buffer time. When in doubt, buffer, but not too much. You don't want a bunch of dead space. So if you're providing transportation to your guests, it's a big, big, big mistake I see that people make all the time is to not book enough vehicles for guests to go at the same time. There are so many reasons why you need appropriate numbers for transportation, and honestly, I could probably do a whole episode about transportation, but I'll attempt to keep it brief here. First, if your bus has to make loops, that means that some guests will arrive very, very early, earlier than anyone on site will be ready for them. And if it's hot outside, they'll be absolutely melting by the time your ceremony begins. We don't want your guests to be uncomfortable. Second, if you tell guests that shuttles will be looping, I can almost guarantee that your earliest buses will be very empty and there won't be enough room for all of the guests who want to take the shuttle that leaves at a normal time. So you'll end up with guests scrambling to get Ubers if they're available, or you'll have a whole bus full of guests arriving late and possibly delaying your ceremony. This is why thinking through logistics is so important. Okay, moving on. Cocktail hour. So you've calculated ceremony time and possible travel time to get your guests to the reception. When will your cocktail hour begin and how long will it be? A standard 1 hour cocktail hour might be fine, but we need to think through logistics, the magic word again. Whenever we're deciding on cocktail hour timing, we have to think about photos. Are you doing a first look? Meaning, are you taking photos with your fiancé before the wedding ceremony? That would usually mean that most of your photos have been completed before the ceremony, so you won't have to miss much of your cocktail hour. If you're seeing your fiancé for the first time walking down the aisle and have all your photos to do post-ceremony, this either means you'll likely miss your cocktail hour, or you could extend it maybe to an hour and a half so that you can join your guests for a little while if that's important to you. Let's say your reception is in the same location as your ceremony, which is non-religious and should be about 30 minutes from start to finish. Also, let's say you're doing a first look, which will allow you to join your guests and keep cocktail hour at the same typical time frame of 1 hour. That puts cocktail hour beginning at 5:30 p.m. and ending at 6:30 p.m. Now let's go back to the topic of photography and videography. So this is a great time to get your vendor team involved. We love to be consulted on timeline. All vendors do. Frankly, most couples have no experience building timelines for weddings and thus have no idea what they're doing. No offense, y'all. It's just a fact. Reach out to your vendors and get help building the timeline from the people who have the most experience. You also want them to have what they need in order to fulfill their contracts. For example, ask your photographer how much time they need to get through your pre-ceremony or post-ceremony shot list. They might say 30 minutes, or they might say an hour or more. It really varies based on shooting style, experience level, and general vibe. For the sake of our fake timeline, let's say your photographer would like 30 minutes each for first look, wedding party photos, and immediate family shots pre-ceremony, and 15 minutes for extended family photos immediately following your ceremony. This is pretty standard in my timelines personally. And usually I always run this by my photographers before locking it in to make sure it works for them. Guests will begin arriving usually about 30 minutes pre-ceremony, so I usually recommend photos to be complete by that time so you can freshen up and take a beat before you walk down the aisle and so that you're out of the way of guests. So where does that put us so far in our timeline? 3 o'clock, first look, wedding party, and then immediate family photos. 4:30, photos complete. Then you have your chill time in the wedding suite. At 5 o'clock, you have your ceremony start time. This ends at 5:30 when cocktail hour begins. At 6:30, you're going to go ahead and invite guests into dinner. Let's move on to reception. So, it's 6:30 p.m. and you're inviting guests to be seated for dinner. Frankly, if you are out and about mingling with your guests while staff is trying to get them seated, they will never move. You guys are the stars of the show and everyone wants to talk to you. So, this is a great time to shuffle you two out for a little alone time while guests transition to dinner. Usually, a few minutes before we invite guests to be seated for dinner, I'll pull my couple away and shut them in a room to themselves with some nice drinks and a big plate of appetizers. So often, you're busy chatting up guests and don't get a chance to try all of the most delicious hors d'oeuvres, so we like to make sure you get to experience the great food that you're paying for. Most caterers are more than happy to do this, so don't hesitate to ask. Take this time to bustle your dress and then kick out whoever's doing that and take your shoes off and just breathe and be in the moment. You're going to be surrounded by people the entire day. So this time is really, really special. Usually it's that moment where you're like, holy shit, we're married. Share a kiss and some appies and just get to hang out with your partner for a little while. Once you've had maybe 15 minutes and your guests are in their seats, this could be a great time to introduce you into the room. This is where things get a little bit tricky to explain because it really depends on the layout of your venue and how you want the evening to flow. Let's say, for the sake of this podcast, that your venue is all open and guests are all seated in the same room. That makes things really easy. I really like to do introductions at the start of dinner. Side note, trends I hope will die that seem to be showing no signs of dying is the wedding party kitschy intros. So corny, but hey, you do you. Anyways, I love beginning dinner with introductions and first dance. I think it's really great when guests are all seated and it kicks off the night in a really sweet way. And then you can flow easily into a welcome toast or a blessing if you'd like. And after that, usually we let dinner roll and let the caterers get their jobs done as efficiently as possible. Pro tip for dinner. If you're doing a buffet, have your caterer call guests by table to serve themselves. It's more organized than a free-for-all. Your band or DJ can make the announcement about it at the end of the welcome toast or the blessing, just asking guests to remain seated until the caterer calls their table to the buffet. Next, let's talk about toasts. Again, very tricky to touch on if your venue is a weird layout, and we can go into that scenario next. But if you're all in the same room, a really nice time to do toasts by friends or family members, it's towards the end of dinner. Usually, we do this on the fly. What we aim to do is have toasts happen when guests are pretty much finished eating, so there's not a ton of clanking flatware, or people's meals getting cold. But also, before they're antsy to get up out of their seats. We're paying attention to dinner service and taking cues from guests to time it perfectly. Couple timeline tips for toasts. Try to pre-arrange who's speaking and let them know to keep their toast under 5 minutes. I would recommend not having more than 3 or 4 toasts. One time, I was attending a wedding, and every single person in this very, very large bridal party made a long toast, and our drinks were very empty, and our eyes were very heavy by the end of these 20 toasts. And no, I am not kidding. It was 20 toasts. Never ending. There are exceptions to every rule. I once heard a father for the bride toast that must have been 15 plus minutes, but it was the best toast I had ever heard. It really just depends. After toasts, usually I like to work into dancing. So if you're doing parent dances, this is a nice time to slot that in and then kick off the dance floor. You could also put your first dance here instead of being introduced into your first dance before dinner. Sometimes this decision depends on what the song is. If it's really upbeat and fun, it might be better suited leading into kicking off the dance floor. Pro tip for dances. Usually we recommend cutting first dance and parent dances to between 60 seconds to 2 minutes maximum. I know it doesn't sound like a ton of time, but when you're up there twirling around for a bit on an empty dance floor alone, time really slows down and it feels like ages. Also, guests get bored after about a minute or so. Sorry, I said it. I know this is a very hot topic question, and I got a lot of flack from some people on one of my reels about this, but I stand by it. Between 60 seconds and 2 minutes for any dance. Let's circle back on timeline planning for the unique venue. A friend of mine got married at a venue that was frankly way too small for her guest count. Because of that, there were about 100 guests inside the venue and 100 guests outside under a tent, completely separated. And the toasts and dances happened at the most random and inopportune times. Half the guests couldn't see or hear what was going on. Your friends and family want to see these special moments, so my recommendation is to slot in toasts and dances in a place where all of your guests can see and hear them. For example, at my friend's wedding, they had this gorgeous cocktail hour space outside. I would have suggested beginning cocktail hour by introducing the bride and groom into their first dance, then having a welcome toast, and maybe even just doing everything then. Even though that's a lot of things, you have to balance it. Maybe you'd extend your cocktail hour to an hour and a half and just slot it all in during that hour and a half of time so your guests can be part of these moments. This is another great opportunity to talk to your vendors. Your venue coordinator should be able to tell you what your options are and what works best in the space for your guest count. Logistics, people. From here, we start working our way out, adding things like hair and makeup timing. Ask your artists how much time they need per person. And we'd add things like dessert, cake cutting, transportation schedules for wedding party and guests. This should help to fill in the timeline. We also want to start adding in vendor load-in and strike timing. This is something you need to ask them about. How much time do you need to load in? Do you have enough hours scheduled at your venue based on that? Or do you need to add additional hours? And when do your vendors plan to come back to break down? You also need to make sure vendor load-in and load-out doesn't clash. Back to logistics here, the magic word. For example, if you have lighting going in and the lighting vendor will be all over the floor with ladders and breakable bulbs and things, they need to pretty much be finished before your tables go in place and linens go on. And linens need to be there before your florists can drop your flower arrangements. Another logistical point to think through. If you're getting married at a venue that has a loading dock, how many vendors can load in at one time? Make sure if you have several vendors with giant trucks that need to use the loading dock that they're all able to successfully and efficiently work around each other, or space them out in the timeline. Also, are there service elevators on site that need to be used? Make sure elevators can accommodate larger decor items like bars. I can't tell you how many times I've had to take a measuring tape to a service elevator to make sure we could literally fit it in the building. I know it sounds incredibly detailed and complicated, but it will come together over time. Even for me, I always have a point where I feel like my timeline is a mess. And then it comes together as the details fall into place. Take a deep breath and tackle your timeline little by little. Then make sure to send out your finalized and confirmed timeline the week before your wedding. Don't stress. I really hope this helped. And like I said, when in doubt, ask your vendors for help. This is one of the many reasons why hiring a wedding planner is a great investment. But if you can't, I really do hope this helped. And feel free to send me a direct message online. I'm more than happy to answer any questions you might have. Speaking of which, let's do a quick Q&A before we call it. First question comes from Alexandra. How do you make a timeline when you aren't doing a lot of traditions and you don't really dance? This is a really great question. Let's just assume, for the purpose of this question, that you don't have any traditions happening. No toasts, no special dances, no cake cutting, etc. The biggest thing is not having guests guessing about where they're supposed to be and what they're supposed to be doing. Some of these more traditional moments do help with transitions and flow because it breaks up the evening and gives opportunities to transition into the next thing. That being said, you'll still inevitably have moments that can break things up, even if it's not traditional stuff. Food is a good one. Spacing out dessert and maybe adding a fun late night past bite is also great. Also, even if you're not really into dancing, it's still nice to have fun music that some people can dance to if they want. Also, if you're not into dancing, having games or other fun activities make it more like a party. I mentioned this in the last episode, but my best friend went to a wedding where they didn't really dance much either, but they had arcade games and all sorts of fun activities to fill the time. So you could try, you know, something like that. You can rent giant Jenga or Connect Four. You can have cornhole boards or even like Flip Cup or something like that. Make it feel kind of like a house party. Think about what really represents you guys as a couple and play to that. And you can kind of slot those things in as activities and maybe even make them into, you know, moments where it can help the evening to flow and transition. Hopefully that makes any sense. Next question comes from Alyssa. Do you prefer pictures with the wedding party before or after the ceremony? Before. This is not a one-size-fits-all answer, but my personal feeling is that getting nearly all of your photos done pre-ceremony makes the evening less chaotic. My couples seem to have a better time when we're not rushing to fit every formal photo inside of cocktail hour. And our last question comes from Parker. What is a decent amount of time for the reception? I can't seem to settle on the hours. Again, this is not a one-size-fits-all answer. You have to look at the details of your specific situation to really decide on this. But usually I like to say about 5 hours, not including ceremony, is nice. It's enough time for a standard 1 hour cocktail hour and then dinner and a good amount of dancing without feeling like the evening is too long. Any way you spin it, it's a marathon of socializing and eating and drinking. So finding that sweet spot where it doesn't feel like it's too short or too long is ideal. Plus, if you want a party afterwards, there's always the after party. That's it for today. Thank you again for listening and for bearing with me on the gaps between episodes. Stay tuned for the next one. I hope to have that one out soon. Send me your questions and episode requests to hello@areyouweddy.com. Happy planning.